It's just before 12 noon. I'm Kevin Kelly. The show's live and local. And we've got a few guests with us today. First part of the program, Chester Allwiss, music director of the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana, regarding their Baroque Christmas concert, their annual event coming up this Sunday in Champaign. And he has a guest with him, Nicholas Temperley, some of whose carols, I believe, are going to be sung on that concert. And then later portion of the program, I have a guest from Cirque Dreams Illumination. That's a production being given at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois in Springfield tonight at 7:30. We'll hear all about that and hear some circus music as well. It's live and local on FM 90.9. And many of you will have recognized that as the overture or the sinfonia, take your pick, to Handel's Messiah, and a performance here by the Boston Baroque Ensemble led by Martin Perlman. You can hear the Christmas portion of the Messiah on Sunday evening at Holy Cross. Are you at Holy Cross Church this year?
Yes.
Holy Cross Catholic Church in Champaign. Sunday night at 7:30 is the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana giving their annual Baroque Christmas concert. And Chester Allwiss, who just spoke, is their music director and the conductor of the program, as always. And this has really become an annual, well, you just never know. You're laughing there. You just never know. Somebody could get sick or decide to have a guest conductor or, you get a big gig conducting the Chicago Symphony and you need a sub.
I was chuckling at as always.
I missed that, yeah. Well, either way. Nicholas Temperley is with him, and Nicholas just has recently published a new edition of a number of Christmas carols, English carols, his editions, that also contain some of his own compositions, and some of those will be on the caroling portion of the Christmas concert on Sunday night as well. So we'll ask Nick about that. This Christmas concert has become, I imagine, a ritual for many people in our community by now who have to go do this thing the week before Christmas. It's always the week before or the week of Christmas. And the ones I've attended are virtually always packed.
So, I've heard a lot of people say it's their favorite Christmas event around here, so it's come a long way since, how long is it, 12 years or so you've been doing it?
We've done at Holy Cross, I don't know. It's not been 12 years at Holy Cross, but I think that location, it's been about 9 years probably we've been at Holy Cross.
But you've been doing a Christmas concert.
A Baroque Christmas concert, and once it started, it has kept this format. I think we're kind of locked into it now. The location and doing the first part is a sort of substantive concert type of thing, and the second part as an audience participation, more populist kind of arrangement of carols that are, sometimes loosely, sometimes less so, organized around either a geographical theme. This year it happens to be we're doing all English carols. Since we were doing Messiah, we've done French, we've done German many times because they're most prolific.
I heard somebody talk to you out of doing German again this year.
One of the choir members suggested that since we were doing Messiah, why don't we do English? And I thought, fine, that's fine with me. I'm happy to do that. Nicholas and I were talking about it, and it's difficult to find, as is the case with French music, difficult to find English carols from that period.
From the period of Messiah.
Yeah, from the Baroque period. There's no shortage of and he's far more capable of talking about this than but there's no shortage of 19th century Christmas pieces.
There were plenty of old traditional carols, but people didn't set them as nice contrapuntal pieces the way the Germans did. That was always a German thing until much more recently. So Yes, you can get people to sing a carol, or you can arrange it. But to get there aren't very many genuine Baroque English arrangements of carols. It's difficult to find.
So, are in the caroling portion, will there be some Baroque carols that you've...
There are. we come close. Again, I would defer to Nicholas because he's the authority on this. But we're doing one of the pieces in his book is a setting of "Hark the Herald Angels Sing," not the tune that everybody knows, by Samuel Arnold. Is that
Samuel
correct?
Arnold? It's a half a century earlier than the tune that people know, 1791.
So it's later than the Baroque, but at least it's in the 18th century, and it's sort of in a fuguing tune style. Would you say?
A little bit, yes. Yeah.
Fuguing.
But it's also a fairly simple tune you can easily catch on to.
You don't care to sing it for us. Hark the Herald Angels, so imagine that fitting
yes.
in there.
Yes, I should have sung the words.
Well, no, that leaves it to everybody's imagination how to fit those in. Yeah. Well, that does actually sound a little early American. You suggested, Chet, a fuguing tune. Fuguing tune. How do you define fuguing tune anyway?
Well, a fuguing tune is not just a fugue because it's going to be repeated with every verse, but sort of halfway through the verse it breaks into imitative entries, you know, the soprano comes in, then the alto imitates it, and so on. So it's different from an ordinary hymn tune. You really need a choir to do it.
And there's an element of call and response, or antiphonal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But that's pretty much an American phenomenon, isn't it?
No, it was English, and then the Americans took it over. Of course, William Billings was a great guy for...
Well, I guess that's why I'm thinking of it, yeah. Because that's usually the term, the person with whom I associate those, William Billings, who...
But it wasn't the sort of thing that cathedral choirs did. I mean, it was very much a country psalmody.
Well, it's not sophisticated enough for
not
cathedral choirs.
That's right.
You know,
yeah.
Who have to do much more art music. The first portion of your concert, Chet, though, this year is again the Madrigal Singers,
yes.
From University
Richard
High School.
Richard Murphy, Rick Murphy, and the Uni High Madrigals are doing their again. It's become part of the package.
Yeah,
and they begin the program with about 20 minutes of madrigals done in the kind of madrigal dinner style, costumed, and again, they're not really madrigals, and they certainly aren't necessarily Baroque or Renaissance, but they are done by a small a cappella group.
Although it's not all that small. What are there, about 20 kids probably in there, aren't there?
I don't know the exact number. It
but
varies.
About that, yeah.
16
yeah.
to 20, something like that. Yeah.
The one of my choir members, is she a junior or senior in high school. She sings in there, and she came in costume to rehearsal the other week. And although she quickly got out of that costume, I guess she found it uncomfortable or something. But it was absolutely beautiful. So there's that visual element.
Yes,
to it.
That's part of the charm. And you know, we started out doing that as a kind of pre-concert, and then it gradually we just moved it so that it actually begins the concert, even though it's sort of a you know, it starts at 7:30 rather than as people are coming in because people want to enjoy it.
Sure.
So.
Well, and you want to give the kids a chance to
right.
be heard properly.
Yeah.
You did Baroque artists. We're talking to Chet Always, who's the music director of the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana, and Nicholas Temperley, who's professor emeritus at the University of Illinois of musicology and a prolific writer on quite a number of a wide variety of musical topics, and the editor of a new edition of English Carols, including some of his own compositions, and some of those will be on the concert Sunday night, which is the annual Baroque Christmas concert at Holy Cross Catholic Church on West Clark Street in Champaign, Sunday night at 7:30. But Chet, you also just a few weeks ago, did a Messiah sing-along.
Yes.
Which has become seems to be an annual thing.
When I was here as a grad student, this was a yearly event, and it was done oftentimes at First Methodist Church in Champaign, but multiple conductors and with a kind of pickup orchestra, and the people came and sang along. We've done it now for several years in response to public demand for it, frankly. There are people who would much rather come to a Messiah sing-along than they would come to listen to a performance of it. Because they like the opportunity to sing this very popular beloved work. This year was slightly different because I knew I was doing the piece in December with the choir and the orchestra. I had the strings come for the sing-along, and that was essentially my first string rehearsal. So we had an hour beforehand to sort of go through things and get it sorted out, as one would say, and then the people came and we just more or less performed it. So it was the same thing, but it was different and unique. It appealed to some didn't like it, but this was a unique opportunity. So it's another way of economizing. I combined an event we were going to do anyway with a string rehearsal, and didn't have to have an organist try to play that piece, which is quite a task.
So some of the folks didn't like doing it with strings?
Right.
Really?
They thought it was more of a performance and less of a informal.
I would have thought that would have been a treat.
Some loved it. Some didn't.
Some people are finicky, aren't they?
Yeah.
People like
takes
what
all
they
types.
Like.
Well, people feel very strongly about Messiah in different directions because, I mean, it's so much a part of it. Everyone's experience.
Well, and not only about Messiah in general, but also, for example, of how one performs Messiah. Chet,
yeah.
I know you and I happen to generally agree on what kind of performances we like to hear, recorded
mm-hmm.
performances, which are of the, for lack of a better term, authentic performance practice
mm-hmm.
variety,
mm-hmm.
of which we have a sample here. This is the opening. You guys didn't want to decide, so I decided to decide what we're going to start with here, which
Fine.
Is the thing that follows immediately, the
sure.
Sinfonia. And whenever this comes on, any time that I hear this, I'm just immediately captured
Me
into
too.
Wanting
yeah.
to hear
mm-hmm.
all of Messiah
mm-hmm.
all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also from the Boston Baroque performance with Martin Perlman, and the tenor here is one I haven't heard. I haven't heard this recording, so I picked this one because I'm curious to hear what Bruce Fowler does with Comfort Ye. Those are the opening solo moments from Handel's Messiah in a performance in this recording by tenor Bruce Fowler with the Boston Baroque Ensemble, led by Martin Perlman here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, a conversation regarding Messiah and the Baroque Christmas concert by the Baroque artists of Champaign-Urbana coming up this Sunday at 7:30. At Holy Cross Catholic Church in Champaign. And Nicholas Temperley is with us. He is a professor emeritus at the University of Illinois and was my professor in the Problems and Methods of Music class.
Right.
I don't even know if you remember I was in that class. You didn't know me from Adam then.
Oh, yes, I did.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, then good for you. But that was back in 90, 91, somewhere in there. when I was in the master's program. Chester always is with us. He's the conductor and music director of the Baroque Artists. And as I said at the outset, as soon as I hear that opening recitative, the sung speech, Comfort Ye, and then launching into Every Valley, I'm just sucked into Messiah. This is one of those pieces, one of the few pieces of music that I can just hear over and over and over. And I guess that's must be true for a lot of people because we hear it every year, again and again.
Yeah, it's, Nicholas was alluding to this, and you know, that it's probably that if you ask people, they will all say they know it, and what they mean by know is up for grabs, but they have experienced it. They've heard it playing in the background when they were growing up, and to the point where those words are virtually indivisible from that music.
But they only know about a third of the work, don't they? The rest of it. So once when you did
the whole
other
thing.
Parts.
Yes, I did. I did. Once at Easter, I left out the majority of part one,
I don't know if anyone asked for their money back, but I'm sure some people were.
They felt like that they had been cheated. I'm sure. Yeah.
Well, because the most familiar ones are, in fact, from part one, which is generally called the Christmas portion. Part two, I guess, generally called the Easter portion. And what do you call part three? The aftermath of Easter.
Yeah.
But that's the part that's probably least familiar to most people.
That particular. What Handel called accompagnato. I mean, it's a cross between an arioso and a recitative. It has elements of both. And aria, interestingly enough, I was thinking while we were listening to it, because you said the variety of performances and voices and what people do with ornaments and words and tempo and things like that, the choices that range so widely in these things. That's one of the few arias I discovered that was has survived relatively intact and unchanged with no variance from Handel's original autograph score.
Is which aspect?
That piece is virtually...
Oh, that one piece.
That set pair of recitative and aria is one of the few, relatively few. There are probably four or five. I don't remember off the top. I just published a book on the solo music of Messiah, because there's so many variants of it, and it was designed to put all of the variant versions of these various performances that he did with different singers, and so he would change the piece, transpose it, or when he had Guadagni doing the mezzo, the male alto parts, he wrote really wonderfully ornate versions of things for that. So they're all in one place
now.
Well,
it's nice to hear those occasionally, and people can dip into this, can't
right.
they?
Yeah. But otherwise, you'd have to go out and buy different scores, you know. And this, in this utilitarian book, I put together so that you have all of them in one place. But I'd had to do some historical background on it. And this was striking that this was one of the ones that had not changed at all. Except for there were additional two measures of the introduction of Every Valley that Handel left out, and I think it was a good decision.
Yeah, it's interesting the number of times that composers revise something, and then a lot of people think that, well, they should have left it alone. And here's one that at least it has one person's endorsement for having made that.
Yeah, it was a minor. It's essentially the same piece.
We wanted to do a little variety of samples of here, but just skipping over the chorus, which comes next, which is a famous chorus in the Glory of the Lord, and moving right along to another accompanied recitative. Recitative, for those who don't know the term, is essentially sung speech in both opera and oratorio, and sometimes accompanied more or less. This is sung by the bass. And sort of unusual, isn't it, for usually you have a recitative that precedes an aria and it's sung by the same voice. In this case, it's sung by the bass. Then you go to the other end of the spectrum and sung by one of the sopranos, the aria.
When I was growing up, it was still the habit to have that sung by a bass. It's become, I don't know what the autograph was, I believe, for a bass, but it's become more popular in these days to do the version for alto.
Thus saith the Lord?
No, for every...
Who
may abide. Yeah.
Okay. Well, here on this, this is from Paul McCreesh, the conductor and the Gabriele Consort and Players, their performance. The bass here, I love this guy. He's talk about serious pipes. Neil Davies is the bass. We only get to hear him for a minute. And then this is assigned to the second soprano here, Susan Gritton. Is that somebody you happen to know? I don't know if she's English or not, or if even that's how she says her name. And then we hear the chorus, which I'll bet is one of the less familiar to listeners, "And He Shall Purify the Sons of Levi." Paul McCreese conducting this performance of these segments of the first portion of Handel's Messiah on Live and Local.
The Lord of hosts. Yet once a little while, and I will say, the heavens and the earth, the sea and the dry land, and I will say, and I will say.
That's, well, you know, I was going to say that's one of my favorite choruses from Messiah, but I would probably say that about the next one that comes up, you know, as I'm saying it, particularly from,
amazing the high standard, isn't it? I mean, there are no weak.
No. I mean, that's one of the amazing things about Messiah. Right? Yeah. I asked Richard Rossi at Eastern was on the show a little while ago. They did a good chunk of it. And I think I asked him, you know, why do you think this has lasted? And I honestly don't remember what his answer is, but answer was because it was sort of multifaceted. But that's certainly one element of it, is that every bit of it is memorable, at least for the tune, and then some. I mean, there's certainly other Handel oratorios that, you know, I could easily leave because I couldn't go out singing anything.
Well, I mean, Winton Dean, practically every oratorio he recommends cuts. Of course, he doesn't talk about Messiah because he doesn't like religion and stuff. But, you know, all the other ones are weak, and he's usually right.
Yeah, the other ones, I mean, even Messiah gets cut rarely. I mean, but it can't. I've heard more likely a performance of the entirety of Messiah than of other ones. And part of the reason is because the conventions of the three acts of the three parts led into some kind of peripheral areas dramatically. You have some music that is not memorable, and you don't have time.
No, it's the first part that has no weak.
You know, if you have 2.5 hour rehearsals, you can't rehearse an entire Handel oratorio in a single rehearsal. So it pretty much augurs for making some kind of reasonable cuts that still retain the sort of overall larger tonal and dramatic plan.
That's right.
And of course, if you're going to do it as part of a full varied program, such as you're doing on Sunday, you don't have time to do the whole thing anyway.
No.
We're talking with Chester Always, music director of the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana, and Nicholas Temperley, who I want to ask in just a moment about some of his carols that are going to appear in the later portion of the show. It's a three-part program on Sunday night. First part, the Madrigal Singers from University High School in Urbana, and it's based at on the University of Illinois campus, and then part one of Messiah, plus the obligatory Hallelujah chorus. So in case anybody thinks they're not going to get that in, because it's not really in part one, it'll be there. And then carols for choir and audience. And this year, English carols exclusively, and including some compositions by Nicholas Temperley in your new carol collection.
That's right.
What possessed you to decide to actually write some and just instead of just in addition to the arrangements that you made of the thousands of carols that already exist?
Well, most of the ones I wrote, I was very young, and I thought I was going to be a composer.
Oh, really?
But I never was really in sympathy with avant-garde, and so, you know, gradually I turned into a scholar instead. But, I mean, I still like dealing with actual music and not just talking about it.
Well, that doesn't make you unique among music colleges. In fact, I guess probably less and less unusual. And it used to be that I remember, actually, here's another thing I remember from my class with, see, professors who think that their students don't remember anything, there's certain things that I do remember. And I remember, Nicholas, that you said in the class something that people think of musicologists as old men with dust on their hands. An expression that I have always forgotten. And I guess the next sentence of that unspoken part of that would be who don't actually do any music.
Right. Well,
on their own.
I still get, people are still a bit surprised when I sit down and play the piano to illustrate something. Well, I say I'm retired now, but they used to be surprised when I did that because that's not what they expect. You know, I'm supposed to be kind of a dry person who just produced sentences about music rather than producing music.
And so here you've produced some music, but I'm fascinated that you went back to some of your old sketches and finished them, essentially, for this collection?
Well, it wasn't a question of going back. Ever since they were performed, we've done them every year. In fact, we first did them in Urbana in 1959. That's why we're celebrating this year.
I was going to say, there's a very practical dimension to this book, and I've been privileged to take part in performances of some of these pieces, many of them, over, what, the last 10, 12 years with Nicholas. They're really designed to be sung in the old style of caroling. It's going from place to place and, you know, singing for various people's parties, and that's what we do.
That's why
there are some, yes, original compositions, but the majority of them are fairly well-known texts and tunes, and they vary from country to country.
Including some early American ones.
Yes, right.
And here is one. This is not your arrangement, but this is an arrangement that I can find the arranger of, I imagine, if I actually open the booklet. But it's a performance here given by the King Singers. This is I Wonder as I Wander.
As I wander out under,
so an uncredited arranger who really did some serious arranging of that tune, which is listed here as traditional Appalachian carol. And Nicholas and Chet were just talking here that it's variously credited as a folk tune collected by John Jacob Niles or composed by John Jacob Niles. And Nicholas, you said it's probably the latter. It was actually his composition.
That's right. Well, when I decided to publish my arrangement of it, I found we had to get permission from his estate as the composer of it.
Even though he said I collected this from somewhere.
He said he collected it, so it's a little bit obscure.
So apparently, on the backs of the traditional Appalachian folks, he thought he'd capitalize on their on them, and it turns out he wrote the piece. Well, in any event, that one's not going to be on the concert Sunday, but that's just a little taste of one of the carols that you can find in Nicholas Temperley's new collection. What is it called?
The collection is called Christmas is Coming.
Christmas is Coming.
Which is also the name of one of the carols. And
appropriately enough, but you can hear some of his compositions from that collection as part of the concert Sunday night by the Baroque artist Champaign-Urbana, and you can participate in the singing of said carols. And it's Sunday night, 7:30, Holy Cross Catholic Church on West Clark Street. For information, go to their website. You can get tickets there as well. It's baroqueartists.org. I think, org as opposed to com.
Mm-hmm.
Chet Always, music director of the Bach Group, thanks for coming in, as always.
Thank you, Kevin.
And Nicholas Temperley, professor emeritus of musicology at University of Illinois, thank you as well. And actually, we're hoping to have you guys back and maybe do some singing of those carols.
I feel obliged to add that he is conducting one of his pieces with the choir, one of his own compositions.
Okay.
He's a guest conductor.
As well he should.
Yes.
Thank you all for coming in. Coming up conversation regarding the Cirque Dreams Illumination Program at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield, which is tonight at 7:30.
We're just about halfway through the fiscal year, and your tax-deductible gift today will bring us closer to being halfway to this year's member support goal. It's an especially important goal given the recent cut in state funding. Keep us on track with a year-end gift of $50, $100, or $500 at willpledge.org or 217-244-9455. Thanks.
That was a march called The Circus Bee by Henry Fillmore, performance by the Eastman Wind Ensemble, led by Frederick Fennell, here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And that's by way of introduction to my conversation with Jennifer Sierra, who is the Media Relations Director for the Cirque Dreams organization, which puts out quite a number of productions, including perhaps most famously Cirque Dreams Jungle Fantasy. I think she mentions that in the conversation that we had yesterday by telephone. The Cirque Dreams Illumination is going to be at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield tonight, one performance only at 7:30. And I asked her a little bit, what's the difference between Cirque, a Cirque event, which is spelled C-I-R-Q-U-E. You've probably heard of Cirque du Soleil, and Cirque El Waz, for example, has been at the Krannert Center in Urbana that some people may have participated in. There's been a number of other art centers around. Now, what's the difference between a Cirque, spelled French-wise, and a circus?
Wow. Well, the term Cirque is derived from the word circus. It's French for the word circus. So in that sense, it's similar. Our product, Cirque Dreams, has been around for 12 years now, and we have a number of national tours that are out touring the country. Last year, we were the first type of show of a Cirque nature that was able to be presented on Broadway. We had Cirque Dreams Jungle Fantasy that was part of a national tour. Then it went and it played on Broadway last summer. And then it finished up its national tour last May. So you know, there are some differences between our different shows, but essentially it's a European circus-style show that has aerialists, acrobats, all sorts of different performers from all over the globe, and they come together and they tell their own story through their various disciplines.
What defines sort of a European style versus, say, American circus?
Well, it's not like theater. It's not like Circus in the Round, where you're in a three-ring circus where you see everything and you surround the stage. Our show is done on a proscenium stage, like a traditional theater. So you see it. It's very much like a Broadway style show.
Ah, so it's more of a theatrical production.
It is a very theatrical production.
Than a thing under the tent. And tells a story sometimes, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, Cirque Dreams Illumination, that is coming to Springfield, Illinois, tomorrow night, Tuesday night, the story behind it is an urban setting, and it's where ordinary occurrences and everyday happenings become extraordinary. And it's translated through the various different disciplines that these performers perform on stage.
Give us a few examples.
For example, the show starts off and we have a reporter, that the character is a reporter. Her name is Janine in real life. She's from Trinidad and she sings the entire show in English. And basically she's reporting on the scene in an urban city. And then one by one we have different types of people that, like I mentioned, that have their various disciplines. We have aerialists who fly through the air. We have foot manipulators. Their act is called a Risley, where one of the people is laying on their back with their feet up in the air and basically juggling the other person with their feet. We have contortionists that soar high above the stage and do their contortion act in an aerialist cube. It's something that's different, something that's unique, and something that you don't see in the everyday. And one of the great moments in our show comes with the finale, and not to spoil it for audience members, but there is a couple from Russia who do an act that you're not going to be able to see anywhere else in the world. From what I understand, they're one of very few people who still do this, and it's called a perch, where the male has a harness on his shoulders, and the female sits above the harness, therefore she is perched at the top of the harness, and he spins her in various contraptions, and it's really amazing. A lot of these different feats and different disciplines have been passed down generation to generation, and this one in particular, they're one of, I think, two or three people in the world who still do this, because it was something that was very popular in Russia hundreds of years ago. So, you know, you're going to see something very unique and very different when coming to see a Cirque Dream show.
I'm looking at a description we have here from Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield, that city dwellers in this story have various costumes resembling cars, hydrants, barricades, phone booths. What's that all about?
Well, it's supposed to take place in an urban city. So Neil Goldberg, who is the brainchild of this show, he came up with some really unique costume ideas. So instead of just seeing a barricade, you know, standing in the road, there is a person dressed up as a barricade who would be on stilts walking around the stage doing various poses. So there are different costumes that relate to the setting within Cirque Dream.
So you might potentially have a fire hydrant juggling a car or something
you,
like
you
that.
You might. It's not going to be exactly that, but you have to come and see the show. It's really extraordinary.
What about, I mean, the visuals are obviously beyond just the acrobatics. The costumes are part of it. I imagine lighting is a huge element of it.
Absolutely. About 5 minutes into our show, we do something in black light. So to the audience, it looks like everything is black and white, and it really illuminates the performance itself. So lighting does play a very important role in the production. There are over 150 costumes, over 150 props in the show. The scenic design is beautiful. When you see it, you feel like you're in an urban city. You feel like you're sort of in downtown New York under a subway station waiting for the next train. They've done a really great job with putting together some amazing scenic design that make you feel like you're immersed in a city.
And the music seems to be a really important element of this.
Yes, the music is extraordinary. Our musical director, Jill Winters, who also wrote the music for Cirque Dream's Jungle Fantasy, she's done a fantastic job. And there are urban beats, there are ballroom dancing type musical numbers. There's a gentleman in the show, Robert Moraine, who gained notoriety from his appearance on So You Think You Can Dance. He does a performance of what's called popping. It's basically a body contortion type of performance, and he does that to really great urban beats that are still listenable. Like you leave the theater humming tunes in your head.
I'm afraid to ask what popping is. It doesn't have anything to do with popping your joints, does it?
It doesn't have to do with popping your joints. It's actually it's a West Coast type of dance. It's short for popping and locking, and it just means that your body is moving in such a way that it looks like it's popping when it's really not. He's just very flexible.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I've always wondered about circuses in general is where you find these people. I mean, I don't know anybody who practices anything that one normally sees in a setting like this.
Well, majority of times we find these people, they actually find us. We receive approximately 50 video submissions per week of people who have heard about Cirque Dreams and want to be part of our show. And they send us, you know, visual videotapes so we could see what their act is. And sometimes when something is really extraordinary, we find a role for them, bring them and incorporate people into the show. And it is very unique. People find us. I mean, we find them as well, but people really find us quite often.
It's just amazing that people have these talents in the first place or develop these talents. It makes me think a little bit of David Letterman's Stupid Human Tricks. you know, except these are stupid human tricks taken to the, you know, to the extreme, and they turn into these beautiful artistic movements.
Yeah, and one of the most artistic moments in the show is our, what we coin as a aerial water ballet. The performance is called Drenched, and it starts out with a man who is in a sort of business suit, and he gets drenched. They dunk him in a tub in the center stage, and then he's lifted out on his aerial straps, and he, combined with a woman who is on the stage, do this aerial water ballet using the strap contraption. It's really fantastic. It's one of the most artistic moments in our show.
What's the element of danger in all of this? I know circuses used to, I haven't even seen a regular circus in years, but you know, they always used to have nets underneath the trapeze artists, and then if they were really wanted to dazzle everybody, they wouldn't have the nets.
Yeah, there are no nets in our productions or harnesses. Everything that you see is death-defying, but at the same time, you don't feel terribly fearful for the actors. You sit there and go, oh, I can't believe that they're doing this. But they are really wonderfully trained professionals. They've been doing this for years and years and years, but they do some pretty extraordinary feats.
Jennifer Sierra of Cirque Dreams production company about Cirque Dreams Illumination, which is at the Sangamon Auditorium on the campus of University of Illinois in Springfield tonight at 7:30, just one performance. So if you're interested in hearing that, go to their website. It's uis.edu/Sangamon Auditorium. That's UIS as in Sam. edu/Sangamon Auditorium, or the ticket number, toll-free, 800-207-6960. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. On the program tomorrow, Paul Wirth of the Iron Post Bar in downtown Urbana, that is always hosts lots of jazz performances, and particularly between now and Christmas, there's quite a number of performers going to be there. We'll hear about some of those and about the Post's commitment to jazz especially, but other kinds of music, live music as well. Our program today is made possible with support from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods, featuring foods from around the world, including imported chocolates, cookies, cheeses, gift baskets, and party catering. Also through the holidays, daily food tastings with an expanded tasting on Saturdays. World Harvest Foods is located at the intersection of 6th and University in Champaign. Tonight at 6 o'clock at Houlihan's in Champaign, you can hear the Bossa Nova group that was on our show just last week, Desafinado. Tomorrow and through the rest of the week, Nuncrackers, the Nonsense Christmas Musical, is at the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan. 2 o'clock and 8 o'clock performances on Wednesday. And Love Song is at the Station Theater, put on by the Celebration Company in Urbana, performances the rest of the week at 8 o'clock. It's going to be mostly sunny and brisk this afternoon, the high 27, clear tonight, the low 11, and sunny tomorrow with a high of 32. We're at 23 right now. It's WYNL FM and HD Urbana, operating translators W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana.